Hey, this is Golden Tate, and you're listening to the Pride of Detroit podcast.
Welcome to the Pride of Detroit podcast, PODcast, for the people, by the people, for the Detroit Lions, the NFL. From SB Nation, we are Pride of Detroit, prideofdetroit.com, at Pride of Detroit on Twitter. We're coming to you loud, proud. We're coming to you. We love the Detroit Lions. We hate the Packers and Bears like James Comey hates the New England Patriots.
What?
It's one of your better intros.
Yeah? You think so? Would people get that reference?
I hope they did.
What do you mean? No one else is tuned into C-SPAN like I am for a deposition of FBI Director James Comey and why he's suddenly talking about his hatred for the New England Patriots?
I love the news. It's so
the theft of Tom Brady's jersey was an inside job,
and it was orchestrated by Jay Glazer.
It was. We need some background on that one. I originally read like the tweet wrong when Jay Glazer broke the news that he had gotten surveillance footage of the person who had made off with what was his Super Bowl 49 jersey. What was it, Jeremy?
This most recent Super Bowl is 51.
I know, but it wasn't the jersey from that. I thought it was a jersey. Oh, did they recover like multiple jerseys or something?
I think he did. The guy who had the 51 jersey had another Tom Brady Super Bowl jersey too.
Yeah.
As well. Yeah.
But I originally read the post as that it had come out that Fox Sports' Jay Glazer had been the one to abscond with the jersey.
That's a much better story than it would have been a fan. Else you'll hear.
Right? Yeah. Because, like, this story is absolutely uninteresting to me at every single level. And I didn't think I could be less interested in the story until I saw the excitement in Jay Glazer's eyes when he was ready to reveal the video of this guy walk. Like, all he's doing is walking in this locker room. There's no video of him grabbing it. It's just him walking around in the locker room. And Jay Glazer's like, "We got this exclusive video just for you on The Herd with Colin Cowherd." Yeah. And it's just a guy walking. And Colin Cowherd. And here's what Colin Cowherd has to say. He's like, "I know that you guys probably wanted more out of this video, like want a smoking gun, but look at the quality of this video. It's super clear." I'm like, what? How is this something we're bragging about right now?
We're Fox Sports. We got the moment when the police barge in and body slam this guy to the ground, break three of his ribs. Yeah, yeah, we're Fox Sports.
It's a guy walking. Like, if there was a point where someone tackles this guy, yeah, I'd be pretty excited about that. It's a guy walking in a locker room.
It's a guy with a press pass who was he part of he was part of sports media. He was part of, I think, some
he was a credentialed media member. Yeah.
Yeah. He was credentialed to some, like, I think it was Spanish language group. But he absconded with the jersey.
Well,
just like that.
As Dave Burkett from the Free Press pointed out, he walked right past Kyle Van Noy, and that wouldn't be the first time that somebody just walked right past Kyle Van Noy with the objective.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Thank you, Ryan.
I had to bring it back.
Can you tell that the free agency has dried up and we are, like, struggling to think of things to talk about? That's kind of the thing that struck me, Jeremy, was the idea that this is the biggest story in the NFL right now. Tom Brady's stolen jersey.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like no one even paid attention to the Lions signing Jordan Hill today.
Except for Pride of Detroit.
The biggest free agency splash of March 20th.
I think everyone's kind of recovering from a very wild weekend. I know I am. And a great big hearty fuck Duke to get us started. Now let's talk about Jordan Hill.
Yeah, Jordan Hill, the football player, not to be confused with the former Los Angeles Lakers forward.
Yeah, yeah, we're going to get that screwy a little bit. But no, this was formerly of the Seattle Seahawks, and he was drafted, I think, in 2013, and he has spent most of his career hurt. But from what I understand, like, there was a lot of promise to him, and this is, once again, another one of these reclamation projects that Bob Quinn seems to really like getting in free agency.
Yeah, he was a former third-round pick, so they clearly had some feeling that he was going to develop into something. He came by way of Penn State. He was there during the Sandusky stuff. I don't know why that was really important to bring up, but anyway, so he spent some time in Washington last year, spent some time in Jacksonville. He only played in 4 games as a member of the Jaguars rotationally. I don't know, Jeremy, have like terms of the deal come out? Because this seems like it might be another one of those like DJ Hayden contracts where there's a lot of incentives in time, like in you know, time on the field and whatnot.
So, yeah, I want to hear the details of this, because I know like with the Seahawks, he had a long-standing hamstring injury, and then even when he was with the Jaguars, he was out for the few games he was with like a calf injury. So I imagine, Jeremy, there's probably some like incentives to stay healthy.
I mean, the contract terms aren't out yet as of Monday night, but I think that's the presumption with everyone is that this is going to be another incentive laden deal where you're getting, you know, roster bonuses if you're on the 46 man roster on game day. So yeah, I mean, this is what happens with all free agency signings like this. You tend to focus on the upside, and the upside of Jordan Hill is pretty high because when he was healthy, his 2014 season was really good. He finished the season, the last 6 games, he had 5.5 sacks. And then I think he didn't get to play in the playoffs because he was injured. So this is the game that they're playing right now. Can Jordan Hill not only recover from all those injuries, but go on a stretch of 15, 16 games where he isn't limited by another injury? And the Seahawks seem to be fed up with it. I mean, this was a guy who's on the Seahawks. He was expected to be their starter last year. Then a hamstring injury hits him in the middle of the preseason, and they're forced to move on. What is interesting, though, about that situation is I did a little searching, and some beat writers thought that maybe the Seahawks were doing what the Lions did with Josh Bynes last year, which is they put him on injured reserve after kind of a minor injury, hoping to come with an injury settlement later, which they did with Jordan Hill. And then after, I think it's 6 weeks, you can bring that guy back. Right. To your team, although there is also an additional 2 or 3 week waiting period for teams that put that person on injured reserve.
Basically to keep the guy without having to use the return from IR allowances. Right.
Right. And so there were a couple people that thought maybe that's what they were doing with Jordan Hill because he was a guy with so much promise. Didn't end up working that way. I don't know if maybe Jordan Hill decided to join. I think Washington is the team he first decided to join after after the injury settlement. I don't know if that was before the Seahawks could bring him back or not. But it's just kind of an interesting thing to think about because all of the people that I've talked about on the Seahawks side really, really were intrigued by this guy's upside. Really thought, very athletic guy that can get to the passer, which is exactly what the Lions needed at the defensive tackle position. But maybe their patience just wore out on the injury thing.
I mean, the real reason that he finally ended up with the Lions, and I mean, timing is no coincidence. After DeAndre Levy made those comments about Penn State, I mean, you weren't really going to pick up a guy like Jordan Hill until you got rid of DeAndre Levy, right? I mean, there's your smoking gun. On a more serious note, though, Jordan Hill, so, like, the type of player that he projects to be, too, like Jeremy, you know, mentioned his sack totals and everything, he was kind of an undersized guy. Kent, our mathematician, our resident mathematician, Kent Platt, and his RAS scores that are uber valuable and definitely available on our website for this year's crop of draftees. Jordan Hill's RAS score wasn't very good. He's kind of an undersized guy, didn't run very well, but I think it was his agility scores were what kind of put him over as being, you know, somewhat attractive to teams, and kind of like that short burst that he has, he seems like he could be the three tech, but then again, like we've, you know, kind of alluded to, I think that his contract is going to be so heavily laden with incentives, more so like DJ Hayden than it is in some of these other guys' contracts, like Akeem Spence. I think that not only will there be incentives for, you know, making the game day roster, but I think there's going to be further incentives in terms of, you know, reaching maybe certain sack totals or tackle totals or something of that nature, too.
Of that nature. Things of that nature.
Here's a question. Yeah. Who do you think is more likely to be the starting defensive tackle outside of Nada or Ashawn? Is it Spence? Or is it Jordan Hill? I mean, Spence is getting starting money, essentially, right? I mean, he's on a three-year deal. But I'm personally more excited about Jordan Hill.
I mean, that's all going to be largely dependent on can Jordan Hill even see the field, right? Because as we were talking about this earlier, hamstring injuries, calf injuries, these can be kind of recurring. It's going to be interesting again to see the terms of the contract, because I think a lot of it's going to be, can you even make it through, you know, preseason? But I mean, the Lions are at defensive tackle, if nothing but rotational. So I think I'd give the lean to Spence right now. Wouldn't you? You'd have to, because he's the healthy one.
I'm wondering who he lines up next to, though, because he fits the same. I mean, Spence, he fits the same role as Ashawn Robinson, and I think Ashawn Robinson almost has his role penciled in, you know,
almost in at this point.
Yeah, I was going to say with ink instead of lead, but like, I don't know if you want two run stuffers like that, but like you said, Chris, I mean, Detroit's defensive line is so rotational, and not only is it rotational, it's incredibly versatile too. So you have guys like Kerry Hyder who can kick in and play defensive tackle. You have guys like Cornelius Washington who, you know, proved in Chicago that he could, you know, play some like, you know, some snaps from the interior too, though. So I don't know. Akeem Spence is that guy who just patrols the line of scrimmage, and I think eats space and is supposed to, you know, stuff the run. So I really don't know. Like it's almost one of those things where I think they're gonna spend some draft capital on getting a guy who could be a three tech.
I get what you're saying, but to me, I don't know, there was a quote from Akeem Spence in a Burkett story that made it sound like he's going to be their pass rusher guy. And that to me is about
he was talking about how he's getting too far upfield in Tampa Bay's scheme, and that's what he would, you know, he sees the opportunity to do here.
Yeah, I mean, let me just pull this quote from a Burkett article. It says, in Tampa Bay, Spence was asked primarily to be a run stopper, though the 25-year-old said he's looking forward to taking on more of a pass rush role in Detroit. Quote, what I did last year, I just did my job, Spence said. I did what I was supposed to do. I did what the team asked of me, and granted, my numbers weren't what I wanted them to be, but now I'm here in Detroit, got another opportunity, I'm here to make the best of it. Now, he doesn't get very specific about his roles, but the fact that Burkett puts it out there that he's going to be taking on more of a pass rush role is kind of interesting to me. It's not something that seems like is in Spence's profile, but if that's the case, like, well, then the moves kind of make more sense. Like, you have Ashawn and Haloti being your run-stuffing big guys, you have Spence, and now you have Jordan Hill as kind of the more three-tech guys. And suddenly you have a more balanced on paper defensive line, especially in the interior there, but it just, I don't know, it seems like they're fitting weird pegs in round holes, and I don't know, it seems like a Frankenstein's monster kind of defensive line right now.
When you explain it like that, it definitely makes a lot more sense. I think it definitely makes more sense. But what about the idea of Haloti Ngata being a cap casualty and Detroit getting up from underneath his contract to maybe get a, you know, maybe, I don't know, just get somebody in there who is maybe a bigger name or a bigger presence, or somebody who has shown either the ability, A, to be healthy, whereas Jordan Hill has not, or you know, manage to stay on the field by maintaining a high level of productivity. Because, I mean, Akeem Spence can say, well, you know, I did what they asked me to. Well, yeah, you did what they asked you to, and you ended up on the bench.
Right.
So, I mean, like, do you get out from underneath Nada's contract?
It's interesting. It's a good point to talk about. I made it our question of the day Monday, and I said no at the time, and I'm starting to warm to the idea at least a little bit. I mean, they say it would be a $5.7 million in cap savings, which is, you know, that would more than double their current size of the cap space, which, according to the NFLPA, is $3.1 million. So basically, they don't have room to sign a starter. Maybe a rotational guy, but, I mean, they also need between $1 and $3 million for their rookie class. So they're really, really cap-strapped right now, and I think everyone can agree that Nada is not worth what he'll be getting in 2017. But the question is it worth getting rid of that? Because I don't think the Lions can replace him on the roster with someone better. And granted, that's a very short-term way to look at this, because obviously they can move some of that cap space over to next year. But I don't know, like... It's a tough decision, because this is very much like the DeAndre Levy situation, right? Like, they're saving about the exact same amount. Granted, this will be now instead of in June, but you're leaving a poor depth chart even worse by cutting Nada. But can you really trust on Nada to even be that good this year? I don't know.
All right, we'll leave it there. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we need to start our eye. Again, not too much on the Lions news, but I feel like this is a good time as any to start surveying the field, look around the NFC North, see how our friends and enemies, our frenemies, have been doing in free agency, and talk about that a little. And we'll probably laugh at Jay Cutler. We will definitely laugh about Jay Cutler. At Jay Cutler. Pride of Detroit podcast rolls on. We just keep on rolling on. That's what we do over here. All right, this time of year, we want to start talking about the NFC North. Obviously, this is a Lions show, so we talk a lot of Lions, but we always try to keep an eye on the division. And with free agency kind of in its ebb, kind of flowing away here, kind of getting away from the first week or so, it's time to look around the division, take a look to see what teams improved, what teams kind of took a step back. We're going to start with the Minnesota Vikings. Now, as far as I can tell from the guys at Daily Norseman watching them on Twitter, this has been Mr. Bone's wild ride of the offensive line. Do we or do we not have an offensive line in Minnesota?
Yeah, this is probably the story of the NFC North outside of the Lions doing their own offensive line rejiggering. I'm fascinated by what they did this offseason in terms of, you know, obviously they got Riley Reiff, they got Mike Remmers. They basically just revamped their tackles. And I don't think there's a question they got better, but the question is, was it worth it? Because Reiff almost got $12 million a year. Remmers is on more of a fair contract of 5 years, $30 million. But considering those are mild upgrades to what they had, I don't know. Do you think this was the right move by the Vikings, or did they get a little desperate?
I think just from seeing them play, you know, very closely from seeing them play at least two times last year, I remember tuning in for a couple of, like I can't remember if it was Sunday night or if it was Monday night that they played the Packers in their new stadium. I think it was Sunday night. But yeah, I just from watching the Vikings play last year, like, their offensive line was such a disaster. So yeah. Even marginal upgrades like Riley Reiff and Mike Remmers, you want to make the case that they overpaid for him. I think that's a pretty strong case, and it's a rather easy case to make. But they were just so undeniably not only just desperate, but where else were they going to be able to get help? You know, were they going to rely on doing something in the draft? Well, wait, you don't have a first round draft pick.
Yeah.
So in a draft class that is already so lean on, you know, offensive linemen, you'd have to wait until the second round to get anybody. So overpaying for Reiff, overpaying for Remmers, I think it was something that had to be done because their offensive line was just such a disaster last year.
I think it might be even more shocking that Matt Khalil and Andre Smith both found places fairly quickly, too. Like, was no one watching Minnesota Vikings football last year?
Maybe everybody tuned out after they started
4-0? Maybe. That's a good theory. But yeah, I think I'm with you, Ryan. As much as I want to bag on the Vikings for their moves, you know, their defense has defined that team, so why not overspend a little bit on offense on clearly the biggest weakness of this team? And Reef at left tackle, I know a lot of people see that as a mistake, but I mean, Reef wasn't horrible there with the Lions, right?
No, I think you could do much worse than Riley Reef. And, you know, they paid him left tackle money, so he's going to play left tackle. And, you know, I think you saw some growing pains last year. I mean, what do you think? Do you think that he, you know, struggled playing right tackle versus left tackle?
I think he was a little better, to be honest.
Okay.
Not significantly better, but I think, I mean, we're talking about an average, maybe slightly below average player at both positions, in my opinion.
Right, so, but hey, I mean, if you get that right tackle play from Riley Reef over at left tackle, I mean, if they're comparable, I mean, are you fine with it as a Vikings fan? Speaking from watching, you know, so much of them in Detroit?
You're fine for it in the short term, and that's where I think maybe the Vikings went wrong, because they signed him to 5 years. I'm not sure 5 years down the line you're going to be happy with Riley Reef as your left tackle when maybe your defense isn't as strong as it was. I don't know if you're going to be happy with spending $12 million a year on a guy like that when suddenly your defense needs to be reworked and restructured. And so, in the short term, this move makes a lot of sense. I do think the Vikings still have that window where they can not only win the North, but, you know, attack for a real championship. Things really fell apart last year, and you never want to use injuries as an excuse, but if there's a team that could have used that as an excuse last year, it was the Vikings, right?
Yeah, absolutely. They lost their quarterback. It's kind of really hard to replace that. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater, obviously not a world beater, but we saw how badly the panic they went into just to get a quarterback so they could make this run. They still feel like the window's open. They still got their eye on the prize. Let's see here. Besides the offensive line, they re-signed Terrence Newman.
Who's 39 years old. Holy Lord, how's that guy still playing?
He's got that old man strength.
A quarterback of all position, the one where you need, like, speed and agility.
Yeah.
My God. I'm in awe of it. I'm not dissing it.
Now, one of the guys that wasn't feeling that old man strong for the Minnesota Vikings was Adrian Peterson. They have not re-signed him.
I don't think Adrian Peterson's going to find a landing spot until well after the draft.
Really? You think it's going to take that long?
I think it will. I mean, I don't think Peterson wants to go to a situation in which he's going to be a backup. I think he wants to be a feature back. He probably still thinks he can be a feature back. Yes, he struggled with injuries last year, but I am never going to count out Adrian Peterson, even if it's against father time. That's fine. But I don't think that he'll accept anybody telling him that, you know, he's clearly on the decline in his career. And I think he wants to get the lion's share of carries. And don't you think he already would have found a team by now?
Yeah, I mean, if he's looking for a team that's going to tell him he's still on the rise, like, he's welcome to play in the CFL, because he's not going to find a team that says that in the NFL.
Yeah, he can head up to Saskatchewan, play with Vince Young.
That's a very promising team in 2008.
Speaking of running back, I hate to get off of Adrian Peterson for a second, but I noticed they also got rid of Mass Asiata. They haven't re-signed him. I mean, granted, probably for the best, but the Vikings really need to figure out their running backs.
No, because they got Latavius Murray.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And they got him fairly cheap, 3 years around $15 million. I think that's great for them. I mean, considering they knocked off about $15 million, I think, off the books for getting rid of Peterson, and you place it with Latavius Murray, you spread that number over 3 years. Like, I think that's an upgrade at the position for a third the price. Like, that, you couldn't do any better there.
Well, I think they definitely need to get at least another running back to complement him. Like, I don't know if you're going first three rounds, but you are going to need to add one more running back to add to this roster, right?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but Jerick McKinnon is still on the team too, though, right?
I just ran to Google to see that, and yeah, he is still on the team. So I think, I mean, that's a decent backfield. It's not great, but it's adequate.
As we've seen, though, that adequate backfield really doesn't mean scrap without this offensive line working.
Yeah.
Though.
And that's what happened last year, clearly. So, but yeah, I mean, Jerick McKinnon is their, you know, poor man's version of Theo Riddick. And he's fine. And, you know, I kind of like the Latavius Murray signing. I think that he has some upside. I think he's, I think he's a pretty good pass blocker too. And I think that'll be important in their offense. So, you know, maybe they could focus on like a, you know, a later round pick to pick somebody up. But that's also why I think that Adrian Peterson wanted no part in Minnesota, because it's been it was an absolute disaster last year. He was getting hit in the backfield right when the ball was snapped and handed off to him. But on top of that, he's going to wait to see where all these other running backs fall. I think he wants to see like where everybody's depth charts are going to line up, and then he's going to go to the situation most suitable and best for him, and that'll probably be the New England Patriots, and he'll run for 1,700 yards.
I have one more question on the Vikings, real quick. Now that free agency is essentially done, there's probably a couple more moves going on. What do you think the Vikings are targeting in the draft? Where are they the weakest?
It's got to be offensive line still, isn't it? Like, I know they've got the new tackles here, but where they are, they could probably draft here. Like, where they are in the draft is a pretty good spot to draft a guard.
I mean, they could certainly use an upgrade, I think, in the interior of the offensive line, but, I mean, they did just invest a shit ton of money at tackle, so... What about like, wide receiver? I think, I'm looking right now, Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen. Those are your two starters.
They did spend a first-round draft pick last year on Laquon Treadwell.
Right, so I forgot about him.
Right, and I mean, I'm sure they're bringing him along slowly, because that seems to be, Zimmer's kind of MO. But yeah, they'll probably go offense, I think. I think they'll go offense in the draft in the second round.
All right, on to our next target. Let's talk about the Chicago Bears.
The Bears.
What the hell is happening to the Bears, honestly? That is the best way to start this. What the hell is happening to the Bears?
They're a very confounding team, because they're clearly the worst in the division, and they have, you know, the biggest room to improve, and on paper it almost looks like they're doing that, but there are some really strange moves that they made that I'm trying to still wrap my head around. And it all starts with the quarterback, right?
Do we really want to start there? All right, we have to. We have to start here. We have to start at quarterback.
We have to.
They have to go quarterback in the draft, right? They have to, right? They've thrown the chips in the pot.
I mean, maybe they're going to go quarterback in the draft, but maybe they don't see anybody at three that, you know, they're particularly fond of. I don't know. I think that they could go defense just as easily. There's so many holes on their team.
They just spent all that money on Mike Glennon. So, yeah, I think you're right. You're right. I kind of scrubbed from my memory that Mike Glennon got signed for $15 million. I don't know. I think the Mike Glennon experiment will be very, very short. Like, it's pretty well... I mean, people freaked out about the money, but it's pretty well structured for the Bears. They can get out under from it in the next couple of years or so.
Right. I think that they can get out from underneath it as soon as after this year.
They're absolutely poised to, you know, if they don't like anyone in 2017, they can absolutely wait another year or two and, you know, pick up another quarterback. I mean, granted, before free agency, I saw a lot of people talking about Bears were looking really closely at DeShone Kizer, but hey, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I keep going back. I think they're probably still going to draft a quarterback, because this can essentially work out to just be a one-year deal. They get out next year, they only have $4.5 million of dead cap on a $16 million cap hit. So essentially, they save almost $12 million if they back out.
And even if they draft a quarterback, isn't it the wise thing? Play Mike Glennon last year, rest the rookie, and have him learn the offense?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I don't think that they take quarterback off the board by any means, but I mean, they're gonna draft a quarterback, I think, at some point in the draft, because Matt Barkley went to San Francisco, Brian Hoyer went to San Francisco, Jay Cutler doesn't have a job, but yeah, their entire quarterback depth chart went empty, and they replaced it with Mike Glennon. So they're definitely going to have more than one quarterback.
It's just I think what confounds me is they essentially could have had Jay Cutler for one more year for the same amount of money, And to me, like, that gives you a better chance to win right now. And I guess with the Mike Glennon, you have a small percentage chance that he develops into a starting quarterback, which, like I said, I don't think it's even going to matter, because I think they're going to draft one, maybe with their first overall pick.
Honestly, I think from the sounds of things, like, letting Cutler go was fine. Like, it sounds like everyone on the team, front office, whatever, like, everyone couldn't stand his guts. So I think they can roll with Mike Glennon over Jay Cutler. That's fine. I don't know too much about him, but he can't be as bad as Jay Cutler.
Well, the fact that you don't know that much about him is probably a telling sign, right?
Yeah, that's true. Let's see, what else do we have in other signings? They did pick up Prince Amukamara. They picked up three different players to the backfield, actually. Marcus Cooper, Quinton Demps. They picked up a couple of wide receivers. They picked up Marcus Whedon and Kendall Wright. Do you want to talk about either one of these?
I'm so mad that they got Kendall Wright and the Lions didn't.
Of course you are.
I think it's overall a net negative because they lost Alshon Jeffrey, who I am still puzzled as to why they let that guy go.
Because he couldn't stay on the field?
Also, weren't they threatening to hit him with a French ties tag at some point, I think, last year?
I mean, I don't know. That guy is a weapon. That guy nearly won the game for them against the Packers last year. And I don't know. They also picked up Marcus Wheaton, who for whatever reason got more money than Kendall Wright. I don't quite understand that. Kendall Wright only got 1 year for $4 million. That's a steal. That's a real bargain. Yeah. Marcus Wheaton got 2 and 11, which, okay. I don't understand that really much at all. But, I mean, the Bears do need weapons on offense, because now they've spent two straight years getting rid of their best offensive weapon. It was Matt Forte last year. Now it's Alshon Jeffrey. Good luck improving that offense that desperately needs it, because their defense is getting better. Their offense still... This is going to be a bottom five team again next year.
This feels like we've got two teams we talked about so far in the NFC North where it's kind of the same trend. You know, offense is going down. It needs help, but the defense is looking okay. Am I correct? Is that the thread connecting the Bears and the Vikings?
Yeah, I think those two are the polar opposites of the Packers and the Lions, essentially.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's kind of the polar opposite to the Lions, yeah. I mean, at least for Lions, we're going to talk about the Packers in a second, but we're talking about the Lions. Like, we talk about them. Their offense is really good, but then, you know, their defense, you can just chew right through them.
Well, one more thing is that they also signed Deion Sims, tight end, 3 years, $18 million. That's a pretty significant signing, and I think a pretty good fit in Chicago.
I have one last thing, because we didn't talk about the most important player on their team, and that's Jordan Howard.
Right.
Like, I think that they have legitimately, they have the best running back in the division. I think that probably goes without saying. And that's where I think that's where they should invest heavily in their team. And, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier about, you know, where they should go with their, you know, first round pick, number three overall. If there was like a dynamite tackle in this draft, like an offensive tackle, I think that would be a no-brainer, because they did get Bobby Massey last offseason from Arizona, and what they did is they took Kyle Long from tackle and they put him back at guard. Like, that guy just keeps on bouncing back and forth between guard and tackle, and they refuse for whatever reason to just stick him at, like, you know, a static position. And he played well at tackle, and then he played well at guard until last year he got hurt, but... I think he's better suited as a tackle, and then because those are so much harder to come by. Like, so I don't understand. Like, I feel like they should really invest heavily in, you know, whatever it is that makes them the Chicago Bears, if you want to say. But, like, go back to that idea of, like, a good running game. Your defense is trending up. I think that, you know, they didn't try enough in free agency because they had a ton of money. Like, a boatload of money going into free agency, and they swung and missed, like, on every possible opportunity to upgrade the offensive line and put something in front of Jordan Howard.
All right, we're going to leave that part there. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to wrap it up. We're going to talk about the Packers and what they did in free agency, and yeah, they did something. And then we're going to take care of a couple of odds and ends, and then we're going to get to the mailbag. Pro Pride of Detroit podcast rolls along. Let's talk about the Packers. Let's talk about them cheeseheads, the Green Bay's Packers. And let's see. They actually did something. I love it.
Barely. I was going to say, you hate the Packers as much as the Packers hate doing stuff in free agency.
They signed Martellus Bennett. They did.
They did.
They did that. And I'm like, holy crap, they actually spent money.
And as much as I hate to admit it, it's a really good fit, and I'm going to hate that guy so much, even though I like him as a person so much.
You just like the two Bennett brothers.
Well, the Bennett brothers are the best. That is...
Even when they're saying Stafford is responsible for JFK's death?
Yeah, it's okay. Hilarious. Okay. I don't care.
Yeah,
it's
I can
hilarious.
Agree with that. Yeah.
especially when they're doing that.
But, I mean, he's going to tear it up. If he stays healthy, I think he's going to be, you know, I think he'll lead the league in receptions among tight ends. But let's not shy away from the fact that that's essentially all that the Packers have done this offseason.
Yeah, this is, I mean, they've kind of got a couple guys off the street. They got Lance Kendrick and Devon House, but that's really it.
Yeah, as far as free agency signings, like, that's really it. Like, the Devon House signing, and, like, I mean, make of that whatever you will, but I think one of the biggest things they did outside of Martellus Bennett is they brought back Nick Perry.
Sure.
Yeah, it's all about who they brought back and who they lost, because, I mean, yeah, they brought back Nick Perry, but they lost, you know, they lost J.C. Tretter, Micah Hyde, Julius Peppers, T.J. Langs, Eddie Lacy. And I can never say this name right. Dayton Jones, and Jared Cook. So that's a lot off the offense that they've lost. They've especially, you know.
There's a lot to be concerned about, because the main complaint about the Packers last year amongst their fans was their secondary. And now they're out without Micah Hyde. Now, you know, they don't have Julius Peppers rushing the passer. Sure, they added Devon House, but, like, I think that's a net negative in terms of their defense. And like you said, offensive players, I don't think they're going to miss Eddie Lacy that much. I don't know what the hell they're going to do without TJ Lang. Draft a guard or something.
Rest in peace, the mobile cheeseburger. Heading up to Seattle, getting some cream cheese.
Ugh.
I mean, it kind of does set the tone and the table for what the Packers are going to do in the draft, right? They've got to do something along this offensive line. Probably in the interior again.
Sure, and I mean, they're drafting in the first round, they're drafting in the second round, and this is par for the course for the Green Bay Packers every year, right? They don't do anything during free agency. Sometimes they re-sign people, sometimes they don't, and they just restock in the draft. And I don't know, like, I feel like it's always risky to, you know, trust cornerbacks right off the bat. Most oftentimes they don't work out like that, but, you know, in the first two rounds they could fill a couple of needs pretty easily. I mean, they could get a guard, right? They could get a guard at the end of the first round, like a Forrest Lamp, if they wanted, and then in the second round they could target a cornerback because there's just so many of them. So I think that where they are in need, that they could definitely address those needs fairly easily. In the draft this year.
It all seems weird to me that they sit on their hands, though, like this. I'm looking at the NFLPA salary cap report. They only have 60 players signed, which is what it looks like maybe the second fewest in the league. They still have $24 million in cap space. Like, are they just planning to wait around for that time in the offseason where teams start cutting veteran players after the draft, just kind of hoping to pick up some guys then? Like, what? Why do they always do this? Because, listen, I don't think... Like, I know that they've won the division, you know, 20 out of the last 19 times somehow. But they aren't really a good team-building team, right? They're not really a team that's well-balanced on both sides of the ball. They're a team that has just subsisted on having an amazing quarterback for the past 80 years.
Yeah. Well, how about this, too? Their starting running back right now was a wide receiver at the beginning of last year. Like, they still have Ty Montgomery. Like, and Montgomery. I don't think that they're going to roll with Ty Montgomery. Call me crazy, but I think Adrian Peterson's going to be a Green Bay Packer.
Ooh. Yikes, that would be awful on multiple levels for everyone.
No, you know what? I hope they do it, because I don't think that guy has anything left.
I don't want to bet against AD.
Go ahead and run against whoever fills TJ Lang's void. Have fun with that, Adrian Peterson.
So who's going to be the backup to from Aaron Rodgers that we're going to have to hear about from JS Comets?
Probably Hundley again, right?
Yeah, they're going to stick with Brett Hundley.
I feel like there's this contingent of Green Bay Packers fans who would be Kellen Moore fans in another life that think Hundley...
Yeah, they would. They absolutely would.
...is like the legit... Like, I think they think they're going to trade Hundley like the Patriots can dish out their backup quarterbacks all the time.
I'm sure we've talked about this before, but, like, is that the one thing that, like, Packers fans and Lions fans have in common is that the hill that they will plant their flag in and die on is the backup quarterback position?
I mean, just look at what happened to Scott Tolson. To Jeremy's point, they'd got nothing for Tolson. He just walked and went to the Colts. But I remember so many JS Commons talking about it's time to play Tolson, see what Tolson's got, you know, stop worrying about Aaron Rodgers.
It's one of my favorite tropes in football. Gotta see what the backup has. Gotta see what he's got. Gotta see what he's got.
I mean, what's one of the oldest line in sports? The backup quarterback is everyone's favorite player in town.
But how can you say that in Green Bay when you have back-to-back Pro Bowl? Not just Pro Bowl. These are going to be Hall of Fame quarterbacks.
I understand that, though. But at the same time, like, if we can talk about this all we want, but... I mean, the Packers should have been winning more Super Bowls and winning more playoff games in this time with Aaron Rodgers, right? It's been 7 years.
I just think it's really hard to win a Super Bowl.
Sure, it is. Absolutely, it is very hard to. But at the same time, like, they're not even advancing in some places. I mean, the last time they went to the
Super Bowl... It's been a while since they went to a Super Bowl. Just as long, right?
Yeah. Last time they won the NFC was...
They have the best quarterback bar none in the league. They should be there.
They haven't gotten out of the NFC Championship since, like, when they last went to it, won the Super Bowl, yeah.
Yeah, but they made it to the NFC Championship last year, and their team was so depleted. Like, think of all the wide receivers that Aaron Rodgers was throwing to, and I know the whole, yeah, but Aaron Rodgers makes all of his receivers. It's like, dude, the guys that he was throwing to at the end of last season, like, Jordy Nelson had fractured ribs and was probably drugged out of his mind.
They were car tires on a rope hanging from a tree.
They were, yes, sure. We'll call them those. That's what we'll personify them as.
That's kind of the point that we're making, right? Like, Aaron Rodgers has been so damn good, and they're still not making the Super Bowl because they can't build a roster.
Well, that's the thing. I'm not putting the blame on Aaron Rodgers like JS comments are. That's weird and stupid. I'm putting it at the feet of the front office.
Well, there are a lot of Packers fans out there that don't like Ted Thompson.
I mean, I get the Ted Thompson strategy. I totally get it. I think in an ideal world, his strategy is right, that you want to build from within. You don't want to have to spend a ton of money with people from the outside and nailing yourself down the contracts. But good God.
They're not, like, this offseason, they're not even re-signing their own. They lost, like, 7 guys, and, like, at least 5 of them were significant contributors.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, they're losing more than guys that you can't replace all of this in one draft. Yeah.
So I don't know. I think out of all the teams, the Packers by far got the worst so far.
We're seriously doing this. We're seriously painting this picture. We are in these 30 minutes bringing these teams, talking about these teams and painting this picture that the Lions might be now before the draft.
Don't say what you're going to say next. I'm just saying in terms of net negative, net positive, Packers got net negative
and
worse.
That the Lions got the net positive the best.
I didn't say that.
I mean, that's the picture we've been
painting
here.
Because we've spoken so glowingly about the Chicago Bears and the Minnesota Vikings as well, right?
I think here's the thing. The Lions...
How would you power rank it? How would you power rank the NFC North right now?
Just where they are?
Yeah.
I honestly think the Vikings jumped the Lions. And not because they got significantly better, but because they had less holes to fill and they directly addressed those holes. So I would probably go, like, 1-2 interchange between Packers and Vikings, then Lions and Bears.
Okay. I can buy that. Yeah.
So, just to be clear, Jeremy said that the team with Sam Bradford is the best team in the NFC North.
He was fine last year. He was.
It's going to be Teddy Bridgewater again.
I don't know, man.
And that's super sad. Like, I don't want them to lose Teddy Bridgewater that way. Like, that was the wrong way to lose him. Like, I wanted them to lose him because he wasn't that good of a quarterback. But, like...
I think he's better than Bradford.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, don't get it twisted, too. I mean, they had such high expectations for him, too, coming into the season. So that's why it was such a devastating blow, because they felt like they were gearing up for a, you know, a serious deep run in the playoffs, you know, going towards something like a Super Bowl. That's the only reason why you spend a first-round draft pick to get Bradford. I understand. Bradford did not have – he had an above-average year, but I think that he did not make that team better.
By the way, happy trail to Sean Williams. We didn't mention this in the Vikings, but Sean Williams has hit the streets. So
they lost Captain Munnerlyn, too.
I was going to say, yeah, I wanted to bring that up. They've lost the best name in the NFC North. He is no longer in the division. I'm sad.
All right, so hit me with your power rankings in the NFC North.
Green Bay number one, Detroit number two, Minnesota number three, Chicago number four.
So nothing's changed.
I agree. Like, I get where you're coming from. Like, yeah, the Vikings plugged two big holes that they had, like their tackle spots. And I think that even putting marginally better players in there will improve them. They still don't, I mean, they don't have much in the way of the wide receivers. And their defense has a hard time staying healthy. And now you're relying on 39-year-old Terrence Newman to be your number two corner? And they don't have a first, and they don't have a first round draft pick.
Those are fair points, but I just want to remind you guys, Minnesota was one game behind the Lions.
Cool,
that's it.
And, yeah, and we butt flipped on them. So until they butt flip back at us, we beat them twice. So we own the Vikings.
I think that's fair. I think I can agree with Brian's rankings here. I think the Vikings situation is a little more precarious than people think. I'm not going to make the jump for the Lions, though, not to number one. All right, I think we went pretty well there. I think that's it for the NFC North. Hope you guys liked that preview. Let's take a quick break here, and we'll come back in the mailbag. Blizzards.
I'm like a big fan of doing the whole strawberry cheesecake thing.
You like the strawberry cheesecake?
Yeah, I like cheesecake bites in anything are really good. Cheesecake pie bites.
I'm just such a toffee fan. I just have to get that Heath Blizzard, but I've seen the ones that have like the fudge in the middle now, and I just really want to try one of those.
Brownies are underrated in those kind of things. I love brownie chunks and shit.
Anything that's like soft.
Well, if I'm going to get a brownie at Dairy Queen, I'm just going to get the soft serve with the brownie sundae shit, right?
You could do that. It's acceptable.
But for some reason, the brownies taste like really salty to me.
It's good. Sweet and salty.
No, I don't need that salty. My family has like sodium, like not sensitivity, but we all have to watch our sodium. So
ask for the brownie without any salt on it. That's what I do with my French fries at McDonald's.
Gross, son of a bitch.
Do you guys get those dilly bars?
Dilly bars are good. Like, for, like, a basic ice cream, I like a dilly bar.
Do you remember seeing that picture of that one Minnesota coach who was eating the dilly bar in the blizzard?
That is my only introduction to a dilly bar. I've never had a dilly bar. I never knew of their existence before that. I've never heard about it in any other context.
It's just like vanilla ice cream with chocolate coating, candy coating on it.
It's a Klondike bar on a stick, essentially.
I'm familiar. I'm familiar with these ice creams on sticks.
I'm very familiar with them. I think we should just do this as they open the mailbag. I've been recording. This should just be our cold open. Are we on the mailbag now?
Our cold open? Because it's ice cream? Do you
I'm going to talk about the big chicken now.
We got to read our review, though.
Okay, we're going to read the review, and then we're going to talk about the really big chicken that happened this week, and then we're going to get into the questions. So read our review. We are in the mailbag. The Blue's Clues music has played. We're just doing the mailbag. We're freeballing this. Let's go. What's the review? What's our review?
All right. It is from GoDutch01. It is 4 stars, a contingent 4 stars, maybe 5 stars.
What is this contingent crap? Wait, what?
The title is Mike in either LA or IA. So either Mike in Los Angeles or Iowa. I'm not sure. He says, A fun listen which brightens my week. Can get off topic sometimes, but who doesn't? They have yet to determine which Chicago-style pizza is best. Giordano's, Gino's East, Lou Malnati's, Pizzeria Uno's. If they get that one right, consider it 5 stars.
Listen, I'm not going to negotiate with terrorists here.
Especially over pizza.
Give us our 5 stars or not. Yeah, yeah. Not especially over this question, too. This is like asking Philadelphia people which is the best cheesesteak.
We'll figure that out soon enough.
We have to figure that out because we're all going to the draft, yeah. But I don't know. Ryan, you were the one of us here that went to Chicago, so... But you didn't get to have all these different pizzas, so it's kind of hard for you to make the declaration.
Right. I've heard a lot of people say that Gino's East is pretty good, but it seems like the two major ones are Giordano's and Lou Malnati's, and they're definitely two different kinds of pizza. Giordano's is much more traditional in the sense that you got like the doughy crust, but Lou Malnati's is like an actual pie where like the crust is flaky, and it seems like the ingredients in their pizza soup is a little bit better. A little bit more high quality, not as commercial.
Let me ask then: do either one of the? Because I have my opinions on the crust, and this actually helps me out. Does Lou Malnati's use spinach in the pizza?
I think they have those options,
but that's like the traditional deep dish, not really topping, but you know what I'm saying. Right?
Yeah, yeah, sure.
But that's like the traditional one is spinach.
I'm gonna say Lou Malnati's because like Giordano's can be too heavy sometimes, but I don't think I would ever turn down a piece of pizza from Lou Malnati's.
I mean, the flaky thing won me over, right? Because that's where I got in with deep dish, was like it's got to be a little chewy on the inside, but then like once you get to that back crust there, it's got to be flaky.
Yeah, and let me also just say that I went with Lou Malnati's on the hope that I got it right instead of being like just a clown and picking Giordano's, which seemed like it was too easy of an answer, and I'm definitely shilling for that extra star.
Oh boy.
Jesus
well,
Christ.
Well, we'll check in next week, see if Go Dutch changed his mind or not.
Wait, hold on a second, but he asked us to tell which one was the best one, but he didn't say that we only got one guess and we have 3 people here, so there's only like 4 options.
I've never been to any of those, though. But, yeah, I guess to cover our ass, I'll say Giordano's.
Well, you gotta say it right first.
No, I said it. Giordano's. Whatever.
Whatever he says.
It's delicious.
Yeah. Agreed. Let's get on with the mailbag. Let's open with Evan at Big Slick McDick. Hey, can you guys talk about cars again? Thanks. James also adds in, I agree, your car choices and discussion were good, especially the muscle car aspirations.
I don't know if that's being just super, super ironic or genuine, but... Yeah, sure, Evan, we can talk about cars a little bit more. I found out that my Jeep Cherokee is a 4-cylinder instead of a 6-cylinder, so that means it takes a little bit longer to get up to top speed on the freeway, and that's kind of dangerous in Michigan here, where we have a lot of freeways where you get on in the fast lane.
I don't know what you guys think about 4 versus 6-cylinder, but I think 6-cylinder has like 50% more cylinders. It's
definitely more cylinders.
Okay, we talked last time about the self-driving cars. What do you guys think about flying cars? Would you drive a flying car?
I would drive a self-driving flying car. I would not trust myself with a flying
car.
But
how many cylinders do you think are in a flying car?
Okay, that's enough of car talk. Thank you for tuning in to Pride of Detroit Car Talk Hours. Let's get to some actual Lions questions. Try to, at least.
Motor City, baby.
Scott Marquard asks, are the Lions going to use a draft strategy of best player in position of need instead of best available?
I mean, that's always what the debate comes down to, and you're never quite sure what the answer is after the draft either, because you don't know who the best player was on people's boards and all that sort of thing. I mean, here's the true answer. There are certain positions that are going to be completely off the board. The Lions are not going to take a quarterback in the first 3 rounds.
Can we go back to talking about cars?
They're not going
to
take Deshaun Watson at 21?
No. They're going to trade up and grab him at 2020.
Nice.
I worked myself into a corner with that sentence.
You could have just stayed silent.
Yeah, I could have. But this is a podcast. People are relying on me to talk.
I mean, I hate this question because we always get these kind of, I think we said we were going to take this question just to kind of, I don't want to make an example of Scott here, but like, is this what people think about a lot of these questions? Like, I mean, how are we supposed to really answer that? It seems half rhetorical and it seems half kind of meandering, well, right? Like,
we don't have a whole, we don't have a very big sample size of what Bob Quinn prioritizes in the draft either, right? We have one draft to make all these.
Even if we did, like how, I don't know, how are we supposed to answer that with this draft and how this team has gone out? And these are questions that are always flip-flopped on when you try to ask these guys these questions straight up. Like, it is one of the old rhetorical questions about drafting in the NFL, right? Best player available, or you draft by need? Well, how the hell am I supposed to answer that for you? I'm not a general manager.
I mean, the general answer to that question is you want to be in a position where you can just take the best player available. You want to be in a position with, I think ideally, that's a lot of people's goal in free agency, is to get adequate at everywhere so that you can just take the best player available, because you don't want to ever reach for a need. You want to just take, hey, this is the guy who we think is the best right now. Let's take him.
Well, let me ask you then, how do you determine best player available but across multiple positions? This isn't like basketball where you can kind of do that, right? Because like, how am I supposed to rank up a offensive tackle against a defensive end and say this one is across the board a better pick, you know, ceteris paribus, all things equal, that the offensive tackle is a better pick than the defensive end? Like, those are two completely different skill sets. How am I supposed to say, like, take everything off and say, okay, this guy? And I mean, that's the whole industry we've made, right? The draft rankings, you know, the top 100 players or whatever. But really, though, how am I supposed to know that the offensive tackle is worth more than the defensive end, except by looking back?
But I mean, that's essentially what you have to do as a GM, right? Like, you have to make a decision between those two.
That's the thing. I'm saying that I don't think general managers work like that. I think they work in a different way. I think they do have needs in mind, and they kind of have their best, you know, their top guys at certain positions in their head. But then when it comes down to it, I mean, I don't know. I think it is. I mean, to go back to the original question, I think it is ultimately needs based.
I
don't think you can ever get equal across the board.
Here's the thing. I think this is the way that you can determine best player available. Figure out what their interests are in cars.
That's probably for the best. Next question. Underdog. Which Batman supervillain would most help out the Lions defense?
It's Bane, right?
Yeah, we're not talking like Dark Knight Rises Bane. We're talking comic book Bane, where he's like, what, a 10-foot tall, muscles on muscles on muscles luchador?
That would be great, but let's just say that he's not going to pass any drug tests.
No, he's not. He's getting Venom pumped into him like nonstop. He would be ding day one.
Do you think Venom would be? Do you think Venom would be on the, you know, drugs you cannot take
absolutely
list, or do you think absolutely that they would just adopt it like Toradol?
No, it would absolutely be on the do not take.
But wouldn't
it kind of turns you into, people notice when you're taking Venom?
Wouldn't you love to see Calvin Johnson on Venom though? Or is that just too scary of a thought?
That's scary.
So
how does Venom work? Do you have to have one of those like built-in like things going straight into the veins at all times things? If that's the case, like that leaves him pretty vulnerable out on a high contact sport like football.
Especially because you can take a player down by, you know, pretty much any means. Like wouldn't you think that like those tubes would be considered like long hair?
Taking him off the board then, would it have to be Killer Croc? Or Solomon Grundy? Is Solomon Grundy even a Batman supervillain, or is that kind of more DC expanded universe?
I think that's more of a Batman-centric character. I think he first appeared in Batman
stuff. I thought he first appeared in, like, Green Lantern or Flash. I don't know. Killer Croc is a Batman character.
Could be right. Though. We're making all of our comic book listeners very upset right now.
I don't even know who the fuck Solomon Grundy, is that what you said?
Yeah, Solomon Grundy, born on a Monday.
Oh, that clears it up. That guy.
Do you not? Okay, he's like a giant zombie. I think it would be Killer Croc.
I'm gonna say Scarecrow, and I'm gonna line him up at tight end, and he doesn't even have to block anybody. He's just going to spray fear gas at the defense, and then we can score as many points as we want.
Okay.
That would be a good defensive tackle position, too. You're right there next to the quarterback.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Or Calendar Man. What about Calendar Man? Do you think that he'd be a...
Calendar Man's lame. You shut the fuck up about Calendar. Yes, it is.
Yes, Calendar Man's a real thing.
Yes, that was like the big thing in the Long Halloween. He got turned into like a Hannibal Lecter type character.
Yeah.
There is no chance that the guy who created Calendar Man was not just looking around his room trying to come up with a new hero or villain.
He was first made in the 60s. This was a really bad time for the Batman. Wasn't there like a bat alien, like a bat Martian that was with them in the 60s comics?
Oh,
like Batman.
Yeah. Batmite.
Yeah. Batman desperately needed the reboot when they went back to Batman Year One. They desperately needed it.
Hey, and
hey, I got a new villain. It's called Dry Erase Board Man.
That's a good one, but it's not nearly as good as Car Man.
Look, all I'm going to say is I'm pretty sure Killer Croc is like a 5-star recruit out of Alabama.
Yeah, for sure. Like, oh,
like just
wouldn't he be? He'd make more sense coming out of Florida, like an Everglades swamp.
It would have to be like he'd have to be recruited out of like the Panhandle or something.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. He'd go to Florida State. Yeah.
Just to clarify real quickly, too, Calendar Man's real name is Julian Gregory Day.
Yep.
Get it? Calendar. Julian. Get it.
Julian Calendar.
Day.
Gregorian Calendar. Next question. We've wasted way too much time on this shit.
That's what we do.
Blake Berry, favorite adult animated show? Okay, spoiler, we are going to do we were talking about a cartoon list cast to kill some time, but I think this one's limited enough that we can probably just say one of these, because I want to do one like when we were kids and shit, but can we do this?
Yeah, we can.
I can do
this.
10 on adult. Answer? I
just one. Just your favorite. I want your favorite.
It's too hard. I don't want to be lame and say South Park, but like South Park at its peak was the best TV show on television, like on all TV.
Jeremy, there was one answer for you.
No, there wasn't. It's always been South Park. I've never enjoyed any other bullshit Fox cartoon.
I mean, my favorite was, I mean, I didn't, it's kind of a problem because like I stopped watching Adult Swim at certain points and I kind of phase in and out of it. And I've been really enjoying Rick and Morty, what I've been watching. I've been kind of catching up. I know Ryan and Alex are way more in tune with Rick and Morty than I am. But I really enjoyed Venture Brothers. Actually, wait, no, I'm sorry. I really enjoyed Venture Brothers, but I think my top answer has to be Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
A good one too.
It's not on the air anymore, but I mean, like, talk about a show that kind of was fucking revolutionary.
I didn't watch enough Aqua Teen Hunger Force. I'll have to go back and probably watch a little bit more of that, because that was a very good show from what I watched.
Did you guys used to watch those Carl Stone Cold Locks of the Century of the Week?
Yes.
They still do those with Scott Van Pelt?
Yeah, I used to hear them on the radio. I didn't get to watch them much.
My favorite animated television show of all time is Batman the Animated Series.
We're talking adult.
Yeah,
you got into
that was for
content.
Adults. It was TVPG, so you couldn't watch it without parental guidance.
Okay. Jesus Christ.
When we go cartoon list cast, I'm going to go longer, because I'm literally, if we go 10, I'm putting all dark adult cartoons.
I'm going to tell you right now, me and Alex are probably going to include some anime in ours.
Ready for a really, really hot take that I just can't keep out of the oven? Futurama's better than The Simpsons.
I could buy that. Well, as a whole body, I think if you went certain Simpsons seasons and tried to rank the best Simpsons season against the best Futurama season, I think Simpsons would win, but it'd be really close.
The problem with Futurama is I feel like when it came back for like the 8th time, it was not very good.
What show do you think was better at its peak, though? Futurama or The Simpsons?
The Simpsons was. Not by a lot, but it was.
I want to bring this up, too. Toonami just had his 20th anniversary. Ryan, I want to see this. Just we were talking about this before we got on the air. Like, what were the shows on when Toonami started? I mean, when you started watching Toonami, what were the shows they had on? Because I really want to compare this, because I was, like, there for the genesis of Toonami And I kind of want to compare how fast they kind of change shows.
Right. So when I first started watching Toonami, I would get home from school, and the show that I would miss like the first 15 minutes of it, and I wouldn't even bother watching it. I would just take longer on my way home, but I would miss Hamtaro.
That Hamtaro?
Yeah, Hamtaro. Hamtaro was definitely a part of Toonami. But then after Hamtaro, I'm pretty sure it went right into Dragon Ball Z, and I was completely hooked on that. But I didn't watch a whole lot of like Gundam or anything like that, but I was super into Zoids.
God, Zoids. Wow. I think I remember Zoids.
Yeah. They were just like really cool, like robot animals. But yeah.
I don't think they had put Gundam on Toonami when I started. Like, I think like Gundam Wing had yet to become like a thing. And then the later Gundam series, they kind of like, actually the older ones, they kind of put on like Adult Swim in its nascent development. I think when I started, it was like, there was Dragon Ball Z a little bit, but it was like more Robotech.
Okay.
And there was still Dragon Ball Z. I want to say Sailor Moon was on.
Yeah, that sounds about right, but I missed that. I missed that part. When I got into Toonami, they had that little robot who would come like in the spaceship, and he would...
Yes.
I don't like, what was his role?
The space... He was like a DJ or something. I don't know.
Okay.
I think my favorite thing, and the thing you probably missed from Toonami, I don't know if they played this, but like way back when they started, they would always interject with all this anime. They would all put in like these old B-roll Hanna-Barbera cartoons, which end up becoming like half the jokes that Adult Swim does. Like, they would have the original Birdman on there and Space Ghost.
Mm.
And Johnny, not Johnny Quest, but...
C-Lab?
No, it wasn't C-Lab at the time. What was the one? It was like the Herculeans. The Herculeans was the other one. And all these, like, again, like Hanna-Barbera cartoons that just end up becoming like, you know, Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law, or Space Ghost Coast to Coast, you know?
I really like Space Ghost Coast to Coast.
That was so good. That was so good at the time.
I'm just saying, if we're doing a top 10 adult cartoons, I think Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law is making my list. I love that show.
Really?
That was early Stephen Colbert, man.
All right, we should probably get on to a Lions question, shouldn't we?
Preferably one that doesn't have to do with cars.
TomFoolery27, are the Lions standing pat with the linebacker corps as it is, or will Quinn find some actual starters in the draft or free agency?
I really hope not. I really hope he finds a lot of more players to play at linebacker. A lot of more. A lot of more players.
I mean, I feel like we can pretty much write to hear Whitehead's name in pen at this point. He's going to be a starter, right?
At this point, yeah, because they've spent all their other resources on other things. So, I mean, it's going to come down to the draft, and I don't think that they're going to draft somebody to replace him. Like, I don't think that they would go inside linebacker at 21.
GV42 asks, the setting the over under at 70, what completion percentage does the defense allow in 2017?
Well, let me get back into my previous answer, and it will get into this answer for this question as well. But I think that they could draft a interior linebacker, and maybe that would just push Tahir or Tahir to being an outside linebacker.
Right.
I think that's probably possible, but probably 69.
Nice.
Why'd you say nice?
I don't know. No reason. I like your prediction. That's why. Your prediction's nice.
Thank you.
N.E. Shaw asks, they live with Rowdy Roddy. There goes Jeremy. With Rowdy Roddy Piper versus No Holds Barred with Hulk Hogan.
I'm sorry, wait, what's the question? Is there a question in that?
I think you were comparing They Live to No Holds Barred.
No Holds Barred is a really bad movie, and I would never do anything to ever put Hulk Hogan over ever again in my entire life, so... Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Wait, isn't They Live... Isn't that the movie with the sunglasses?
Yes. I came here to kick ass and chew bubblegum, and I'm all out of bubblegum. Yeah.
Yeah, the John Carpenter movie. Mm-hmm. Rowdy Roddy Piper was in that?
We just did a 10-minute oral history of Toonami, and now we're going into wrestling time.
Yeah, Rowdy Roddy.
That was happening.
And They Live.
Yeah, he was in there. Oh, my God. He is in They Live. Yeah, I scrubbed that from my memory, or maybe I saw They Live before I knew too much about wrestling, I guess.
Some fucking wrestling fans you are.
Stop it. No Holds Barred is a very bad movie, though.
Insanely bad.
Yeah, like really bad.
You know, I would like to see a movie with
John Cena!
There's tons of movies with John Cena, though.
Is there?
Yeah.
We're going to hit it anyway. Go. John. His name is
John Cena!
Horrifying show. I only remember like a weird faced deer that wanted to get, like, you know, get torn apart or fucked or something.
Wasn't that the episode we all watched together?
Was it?
I think we all watched an episode together and I was losing my mind. Season ends with an unanswered cliffhanger when Grandpa finds the truth about Mr. Pickle's pet gimp, Steve.
Bring me another one.
Oh, you're recording, aren't you?